real quickly, just a bit of research in Carl, Leviticus 7:23 through 25. It says, then Yahweh spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, you should not make a practice of eating any fat from an ox, a sheep, or a goat. And also the fat of an animal which dies, and the fat of an animal torn by beasts with a defect, you know, a visible sore, may be put to other uses, but you should not eat it. So, Yahweh doesn't want you consuming fats from the animals that you slaughter, which was consistent with what I had shared with Thomas. And also, there is a, it's kind of just an intriguing thing, but it's, this is in Bereshit, Genesis 32, the end of the chapter reads, therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he torched the socket of Jacob's thigh in the sinew of the hip. So I think that's more just from the perspective of a symbolic instruction. But the fat's not healthy for us. Yahweh doesn't want us eating the fat. And the reason that an animal that's torn or an animal that is found dead is not food but could be used for other things is you can do a lot of things with an animal hide, for example, or even the fats of an animal can be used for various things. It's just that something that has been that has died is now subject to a high degree of infection or may have died from an infection, and God doesn't want us eating that. All right, Glenn, you had a comment on the economy, and then we've got Cherie calling in from Texas on a question on PSOC.
Yeah, I'd just like to go through, real quick economic okay. Feel for just a second. First okay. of all, just to point out the inevitable failure of a system that is a house of cards built on sand. And first of all, this. But first of all, when you have a privatized central bank, okay, right there, from the moment the first dollar is issued, there is more debt than there is currency in circulation, so the debt can never be repaid. So,
correct.
From
our currency is actually based on debt. Most people don't realize that. It's a promissory note. Our currency is based on debt. If we were to eradicate all debt, we'd have no currency.
Right. So just let me whip through this real quick. Okay, so you have the privatized central bank. Then on top of that, you have fractional reserve banking, which even predated the central bank. So they're only really holding in reserve a small amount of, like, gold. If you had a gold-based system, you're just on a fractional reserve. So they're already lending out many more times than even when they had a gold system, lending it out. So fractional reserve banking. Layered on top of that, then you later have fiat currency, which is based on nothing but debt, as you say. Then on top of that, you have compound interest, another Ponzi scheme. Then on top of that, you have derivatives, yet another Ponzi scheme on top of a Ponzi scheme on top of a Ponzi scheme. Then on top of that, you have Bretton Woods, which is a spoils of war agreement that FDR arranged for at the end of World War II. Bretton Woods, which is basically spoils of war, putting the U.S. currency, making everybody trade using U.S. currency, so we get a little bit of vigorous, a piece of the action for everything going on in that currency running with.
Right. Yeah. So, that's what the reserve status is, but our reserve status is about ready to be destroyed because of the policies of FDR that began this this redistribution of wealth in America and the socialization of the American economy.
Yeah, one can't expect the spoils of one war to continue forever. You know, and that was literally a spoils of war agreement that was put in place at the end of the war. And now, the sands of time have shifted and the seas have changed. And, rather than accepting itself being somewhat humbled in the world economic environment, the U.S. would rather set the entire world on fire.
But this is like one of those backfires that you burn, to prevent a bigger wildfire in the future, and it actually turns on you and consumes you. That's what America is facing.
Yes, exactly. So, all right,
Thank you, Glenn. Hello, Cherie. I'm calling in from Texas. I understand you have a question or comment on PSOC.
Hi, Yada. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
See you nearly every day and appreciate all you've done to help us learn about Yahweh. My question is, pertaining to Exodus 12:7, How do I strike the blood on my doorpost?
Yeah, you really can't. I mean, that's, again, the difference between the things that you can do and you can't do. Because we are in America and most places around the world, we're purchasing our meat. And the meat that we're purchasing has already been drained of blood, and the meat that we grill for Pesach is specifically supposed to be drained of blood. We don't have any lamb's blood to smear on the doorpost. Now, what I know a number of people do is that since all of this is now to be understood symbolically and for what it represents, particularly with children around, they will take a little bit of red food dye, and they will they'll put it on the doorway to their home just to symbolically represent this same thing. But you know, we don't live in Mitzrayim in Egypt. Yahweh tonight or tomorrow night, depending on when Pesach is not going to go off and kill the firstborn children of everyone who is not a Israelite and who does not have blood on their doorstep. That is not going to occur tonight.
Okay.
And so since that's not going to occur tonight, you can be pretty comfortable knowing that if you don't have blood on your doorstep, you'll be just fine.
Well, that's good, because I live in an apartment building, and I was
yep.
on my neighbors calling my post on me when they see me out there.
With some blood. Yeah, you know, in fact, if you were to smear blood on your doorway in an apartment, they would likely call the police thinking that something terrible had happened, either to you or that you had done something terrible. But can you imagine if you live in an apartment, brought a lamb to live in your first of all, you'd be breaking the CCNR, so you'd be thrown out of your apartment. But can you imagine me bringing the lamb into your apartment and having it live there for 4 days? And then in your apartment slaughtering that lamb?
Right. Well, my neighbors kind of expect anything out of me.
Well, you know, I think that everything Yahweh has presented in his Torah, as teaching, as instruction, is designed to teach us and to instruct us. And so long as we answer this invitation and we celebrate it in a manner that shows our appreciation and understanding, then we're doing what Yahweh wants us to do, and we receive the benefit that he's offering.
Yes, sir, indeed.
Yeah. And your sons will not be stricken at midnight tonight if you do not have lamb's blood on your doorpost.
Well, my sons are grown and gone, and I was sure not hoping my little dog wouldn't get struck.
Not to worry. Sure. You know, and you know, the beauty of the Torah is that for those who promote the Torah as a set of laws that you have to obey, therefore you have to do it exactly this way, or otherwise, you know, you're engendering the wrath of Yahweh. What they don't realize is the Torah exists primarily to liberate us.
Exactly.
And it's the means. You look at a guy like Dode, who told us how to observe the Torah. You look like a guy like Dode. Now, he was one messed up dude in terms of his behavior, and yet he was pronounced vindicated, tzedak, righteous by Yahweh, because he observed the Torah. So the Torah exists to liberate you, and there's the 2 days that are the most important in that liberation are Pesach and Matzah. So the very fact that you're attending the invitation of Pesach and Matzah, even if you're doing wrong, you're vindicated.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
It is. Well, thank you, Sheree. I appreciate your call. We also have Kirk on the line. Kirk, you got anything to add to the timing? The timing issue to Sheree on the blood on the doorpost, or to the proper way to slaughter a lamb, which is something that Thomas is considering.
Well, no, I was, you know, the other day, I think I said about the same, I'd say the same thing I said the other day is, you know, I look and see what Yahusha did.
Yes.
I mean, he was the Passover lamb, and he knew how to, and he did it with his friends. They had a meal, the traditional right. milk with all the symbols on it, and they right. talked about it, and they joined together, and if that's good enough for him, that ought to be good enough for us.
Yeah, and in his case, he was the Passover lamb, and he came into the house, which is Yisrael, 4 days before Pesach. Mm-hmm. So he did that very thing, but we don't find any indication that as they found, you know, he told his disciples to go off and get the lamb, but he did not tell them, and we have no instructions on how that lamb was slaughtered, do we?
Mm-hmm. So we have no instructions
on how he cooked it.
No. We assume he roasted it.
Yeah. By the way, I received an email from a very thoughtful man, who actually I enjoy reading his emails. But he talks about there's a book written by a fellow that says that the day actually begins at sunrise, not at sunset. And if it begins at sunrise, then Yosha could not have celebrated the Pesach dinner on Thursday night in 33 CE, which was year 4000 Yah, and then the Passover lamb on Passover. The only way for that to be possible is for the day to begin at sundown, which is the timing that Yahweh gives us for the celebration of Pesach.
Well, the only reason that this was done, in my opinion, as to begin with, is the day starting in the evening, so that event could take place.
Yeah. Do you and Terry sprinkle blood on your doorpost?
No.
No. Do you slaughter a live lamb?
No, we don't.
Uh-uh. No. Are you going to be celebrating Pesach this year?
Absolutely.
You're going to eat lamb?
Yes, we are.
Going to have some matzah?
Bitter herbs, the whole bit. Yeah.
Matzah.
We eat matzah all week.
Yep. Yeah, that's so we're
I like
answering.
To do some symbolic things. I mean, I'm not saying I won't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I mean,
yeah.
I know a teacher when he's teaching, and I know a symbol when I symbol, and that's what we're doing, and I understand what he's doing, and I can read if I want to. In the graphic part of killing the lamb is not nearly as graphic as the description in Psalms 22, which they didn't have at that time. So I mean, if you want to absorb it, we have more information now than they ever did.
Correct.
So
I agree.
So,
yeah, in fact, we even have Yosha identified in Yashaya, which was written 700 years after the Torah was first given, describing Yosha as the sacrificial lamb.
Right.
Yeah, I think the most brilliant thing you just said, as a teacher, you know a teacher when he's teaching.
Mm-hmm.
You know teaching when you see it.
Yeah.
And you know what to do with teaching, because you're a teacher.
Right.
You know, sometimes it does take one to know one, and we're being taught. Here. We're not being directed. We're being taught. Come back to Shattering Myths. You know, Kirk, you were talking about you understand teaching when you're being taught, and you as an artist and a teacher of art made the declaration the other day that the folks that present the ALF on the on websites that says, you know, this is an ox's head.
Mm-hmm.
Are just flat out wrong. That it's and I've now reviewed probably 20 or 30 depictions of the Paleo Hebrew leather LF, and it is absolutely a triangle.
Yeah.
And an ox, if you're going to draw an ox's head or a cow's head of any kind, you just start with a square.
Yeah.
And if you're going to draw a sheep or goat or a deer, you start with a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And these are clearly triangles.
I actually had a student last night who was, or yesterday afternoon, that was drawing his goats. He has the goats that go to sleep. Very odd thing, they pass out. And he was drawing one of them, and I was showed him. You know, I do everything with simple shapes first, and let him build on from there. And we talked about that. And it's every picture he brought of his sheep, it was the same thing.
Right.
It ain't a cow.
Right. So we're being taught by the teacher in the very depiction of the alphabet, the symbols that he is using. Now, I'd also just throw in this thing: what's the difference between a square? The primary difference between a square and a triangle. Or a rectangle and a triangle.
Yeah, four sides, three sides.
Mm. You know something that's associated with Yahweh that has three sides?
There's a lot of things that are three. Three, that's a big number.
Yeah. But how about since the L from Aleph is the primary depiction of him and Ab, father, he both begin with the Aleph that would depict him, which is the notion that he, as our Heavenly Father, manifests part of himself and part of his nature through the set apart spirit. And he also has the most set apart one, which is the Kodesh Kodesh.
Right.
And so there are Yahweh plus two manifestations of Yahweh. That's not three gods. There's not three personas.
No.
It's just Yahweh and two manifestations. But, you know, if you look at a triangle, that's what you would see, isn't it?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So he's representing his very nature and how he represents himself to us in the triangle of the first letter. Kirk, we have had Frank listening for quite some time. This is Frank calling in from Florida. But he now has a question on Pesach. Hello, Frank. Frank? You there, Frank? I know that you you had a question on Pesach. Well, let's see if Scott can figure out how to make contact with you. Cause...
I'm here.
Oh, hello, Frank. I understand you had a question on Pesach.
Yeah, this will be my first one, and you know, I'm very excited about it and all. And I, you know, I called in once. You gave me some good advice about my daughter. And,
yes, I remember.
Well, it's something her pastor, she finally got in contact with me just to kind of ridicule about something her pastor had said because, I mean, I've always played in rock bands my whole life, done some studio work and projects. Some of them did okay. But, you know, he's trying to say, you know, that's dark, and I know there's some dark people in it, but he's trying to say that, I mean, he's going so far as saying that that's the devil, and there's no way I can.
So rock music is of the devil. So he's in the position that he can tell you that the devil spends his time inspiring rock musicians.
Well, you know, a lot of them, their lyrics are critical of Christianity.
Well, of course they are. I mean, it's a lot of us who are critical of Christianity.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
There is a song called Running with the Devil, and if you play the song, you know, album backwards, you do get some satanic sounds. You know.
Yes, and of course Kiss is a rock band, and it's Knights in Satan's Service, and... but this notion, you know, it's amazing how Christian pastors want to label everybody. They can't deal with evidence and reason. You know, if you present them with the fact that there was no person named Jesus in the first century, and that God does not have a name, Jesus, and that Christ is not a last name, and that God cannot die, and that Christmas and Easter are wholly and completely pagan, and there's no justification for Sunday, much less worship, in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and that Paul constantly contradicted Yahweh. If you present them with evidence and reason, they can't respond. So all they can do is slander and attack the messenger and to say, I mean, the stupidity of this moron telling your daughter that because you were once a rock musician, that therefore you are of Satan, is so absurdly stupid, so irrelevant, so misguided, so hideously erroneous from a logical, rational approach. That individual, it just would be, the world would be better off with that individual gone. That's how stupid that is. Yahweh has a lot to say about music. Really does. The guy that he loved most of all was a musician. And Kirk, do you think Yahweh was teaching us something when the person that he says he's going to model his kingdom on earth after not only played the harp, and was extraordinarily talented at playing music, but also wrote lyrics and melody?
I think that would tell you he likes music.
Right. And when Yahweh tells us about these Moed Mikre and about celebrating them, and he uses singing and dancing as part of the celebration, can you sing and dance without music?
Not easily.
Not easily. Yeah, so Yahweh has a lot to say about music, and every reference to music is wonderful. He loves it. Now, Yahweh also has a lot to say about Pauline Christianity. And Paul actually admits that he was demon-possessed. So if you want to know of something that is of Satan, Well, that'd be Pauline Christianity. That'd be this pastor. But as a musician, the correlation between music and Satan, non-existent.
Can I say that, you know, Frank, yeah, also being an artist, just because a bunch of artists have made idols and painted Pauline Christian pictures to perpetuate the thing, does that mean I'm supposed to burn my paintbrushes or I can't participate? Come on, this is silly.
Yeah, it's silly. Because their artists have depicted all sorts of saints and all sorts of images that are religious images and have drawn their Jesus with a halo and drawn their Mary with a halo. Does that mean that all artists are satanic because some are satanic?
Well, that art itself is or painting is? No.
No, of course not. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, it's... the pastor that she is believing, because she obviously believes him for her to confront you with what he said, is an absolute moron. What a despicable individual.
He's trying to tell me that I would need to get blessed or something. It's all of the devil and all this crazy stuff.
Yeah, well, he's representing the devil. I mean, he's a Pauline Christian advocate, and Paul admitted to being demon-possessed. No, there's nothing wrong with you, Frank.
No.
This is stupid. What goddamn religion. In fact, speaking of goddamn religion, I have one of my favorite folks, but Larry doesn't get to chime in all that often during the week because his business is booming. But Larry, what do you think about the pastor that says that our friend Frank here in Florida has to get a blessing because he was a rock musician and therefore he was of the devil?
Well, I was wondering, and then we had the sheep thing going on. Do you have a radiation leak over there? Wait a minute, Craig, I hear something.
We entered the Twilight Zone. Oh, goodness.
I'm wondering what's going on, you know? You would think that a group of people from Unpopular Truth might be yanking your chain a little bit.
You would think so. If this was April Fool's or something.
It was the day after because they wanted to make sure they didn't do anything on any pagan holiday.
There you go.
Oh, these guys, I'm telling you, they had to get in there. You know, I thought I was in the Twilight Zone for a minute.
So you're not going to, you're going to be celebrating Pesach probably tomorrow evening. You're not going to smear any blood on your doorpost either, are you?
No, and I'm not going to sell the sheepskin and all that. I mean,
are you going to turn off all music? Because you wouldn't want to listen to...
I'm going to open it up with some nice horn sounds and then probably go into some better music, too, you know? I mean,
Yeah.
How about yourself?
I'm actually going to celebrate it this evening, and I know I told you that I was going to celebrate it on Friday, but I just like to be, I don't want to be arbitrary. I want to be as consistent as I can be, and my thing is that I think that if there's renewable light on the moon's surface prior to the moon setting, that would be the most precise way to ascertain the start of a new month, and on that basis.
From
it would,
Jerusalem, but not from here in Florida.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you'd never be able to see it. It'd take the absolute best eyesight under the best possible circumstances to see it, because it was 0.1% when the moon set. And so,
That's true.
But I just like to be consistent. You know, I know that it can't be determined with great accuracy, but consistency is a good thing. You never can go wrong with consistency.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, you're going new, totally new, and that's probably right. You know. So.
Yeah.
But that is from the perspective of Jerusalem.
That would be a perfect. Actually, it doesn't make any difference where the perspective is. So long as you have a low horizon in the west and good eyesight and absolute perfect observational conditions. or you just simply use the sun and moon as signs, and you are able to interpret the data with the sun and moon as signs. By the way, that was the you sent me a response to the fellow that wanted to have the lunar week, and of course it was a lot of information there. But you know, the one that was the definitive for me, beyond the fact that Yahweh, as you noted, never associates his Shabbat with the moon. You know, he doesn't say, you know, following the new moon is a day of celebration, and the next day would begin the first day of the week, and you know, he doesn't say anything like that. Doesn't he tell us in Bereshith that the greater and lesser light, the sun and the moon, will be visible to us as signs of the meeting times of the Moed?
Yes, that's exactly.
He doesn't tell us that it's the moon and barley that are the signs of the Moed, does he?
No.
No. No, the meeting times are determined by the sun and the moon, which means we're supposed to use the sun and the moon to determine the timing of the Moed. That'd be the beginning of a month and the beginning of a year.
That's right. And then you have a situation, too, you know, in that particular response, you go, I think I brought it all the way back to 225 BCE. We can go back that far in written information.
Right.
Where the Romans would wait to attack.
Right.
The Jews, because they'd be in their, they'd be in their temple, and they'd
right.
always do it on what the Romans called Saturday.
Yeah, Saturn's Day. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we have independent confirmation from the Romans that it was the seventh day of the week. It was always Saturn's Day, which their week was 7 days long, and which the day that we call Saturday. And we have Yosha going into the temples to teach from the scrolls of the Torah and prophets, as was his custom on the Sabbath, and it was the same as what was being done in, at the time by rabbinic Jews. I mean, Yosha found lots of argument with rabbinic Jews, but never was it on the timing of the Shabbat, where he was following a new moon and they were following a different 7 day standard, and so, you know, his timing was identical with theirs, as a matter of fact, you know, his celebration of Pesach lined up perfectly for that.
Well, it
goes all the way up to I think I could. Ran some of those all the way up to 116 BCE. I'm not sure, but there's,
yes.
You know, or excuse me, CE.
Right.
So, you know, we have hundreds of years in there where
right.
it's always the same. Now, can you
right.
imagine? Had,
right.
And then you got the Talmud. Not that I'm pushing the Talmud,
no.
But they argue about everything in the Talmud.
Everything
possible.
Right.
Never did they debate when the Shabbat was. Not once.
Never.
No.
It was always every 7 days. As a matter of fact, they specifically said, you know, you can't make an argument for the a lunar Shabbat. You know, twice they said in the Talmud, you can't make an argument for it. Now, again, we are anti-Talmud. But
right.
when the Talmud is saying, you know, that the Torah just doesn't allow this, then, you know, in those cases, they're right. The Torah just doesn't allow a...
They all took different sides on everything, but not on Shabbat.
No.
They just didn't do it. And,
no.
And you know, if you have hundreds of years of records...
Right.
And we do.
Right.
And it's always the same day.
Right.
Can you imagine in the last...
And you have Yosha agreeing with it.
Yeah, and in the last 1,500 years, also, I want to point this out. This
and by the way, no dispute during all of these hundreds of years, no dispute as to when it is.
Right, and this is something else about Yahweh. He points out time and time and time again, you're going to remove my name.
Right.
You're going to remove my name. Did he ever say you're going to change my Shabbat?
No.
He says you're going to corrupt my Moed Mekra.
Yeah, he says you are going to. There's a reference to changing the times and changing the meetings during the last days. But you know, the Christian Church and Muslims and social secular humanists have done that for a very long time.
Yeah, and they'll probably make it mandatory.
Right. So Yahweh said that you're going to do it. We've done it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, is it is there somebody that is that will in all likelihood do what the Romans did? The Romans outlawed the Shabbat, outlawed it, penalty of death. And the Torahless one, since he is going to be very Roman Catholic in nature, he's likely to do the same thing, to outlaw the Shabbat.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely make it mandatory for Sunday worship of the Lord. You want to bet?
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
What's going to happen?
And yeah.
I'm just saying that, you know, with all these records, it's an impossibility to think in the last 1,500 or 1,800 years somehow people who follow the Shabbat all over the world just suddenly stopped.
Yeah. The only question really is the only question I think is murky on this, Larry, is the change from Julian to Gregorian calendar, where the Gregorian said we have to adjust the Julian year because our Julian year is no longer celebrating Easter at the proper time, and their purpose of doing it was because they didn't calculate the quarter of a day, and so the over time, the Julian year had pushed Easter so that it was no longer a good counterfeit for Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, and to get Easter realigned so that it was at least close in the same month of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. They realigned to the Gregorian calendar, and during that time, there's a possibility of some shifting, but it's really hard to assess. Back to Shattering Myths. We have Shannon calling in from the Devil's Den from Washington, D.C. with a question on Pesach. Just kidding about the Devil's Den thing, Shannon. But you have a question on Pesach?
Yes, I do. Tomorrow will be my first time observing it. And I just have a quick question because I do live in a city, and lambs are hard to come by. So if I can't find a lamb to slaughter, what if I find a rabbit?
Do they have supermarkets? They have supermarkets there in the Devil's Den there, Shannon?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, those supermarkets, I assume that, but in Washington, there is no supermarket. Oh, you guys are just
Shannon, by the way.
Yeah, you guys are too much. Yeah, I think really what you ought to find is the most suitable counterfeit for lamb. I'd go off and club a snake. All you have to do is go to Congress. I mean, there's lots of them there. Go and club a snake.
Can I give you a little
rat?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are rats too there.
You got to love it, right? You really have to love it. I want to say one more thing about this Shabbat thing. You know,
yes.
Yalda is from Shiraz, and that's where all these Yehudim at the time were brought back from Babylon.
Right. Right.
By Kirash. Mm-hmm.
Right.
To this day, there's a community of 25,000 in that town. Guess what calendar they use? They use Jaloli. They use the Persian calendar, Jaloli.
Okay. Uh-huh.
All right? And guess when the Jews in Iran do the Shabbat? Take a stab.
Same day we do.
On Saturn's day, you know. You know, and they don't use the Gregorian calendar. So this is not just a Gregorian calendar trick. This is a seven-day reoccurring.
Right.
You know, there's evidence everywhere.
And by the way, that's been my argument against the day of the week being messed up by the switch from Julian to Gregorian is that the Gregorian was really influenced Roman Catholicism. He was a pope in Roman Catholicism. And out of the Julian, the Roman Empire became the Roman Catholic Church. But the Romans and the Roman Catholics didn't control the world. The Chinese, the same day, the seventh day of the week is the same in China. It's the same in India. It is the same in Persia. All uninfluenced by the
Persia, to this day, does
Gregorian.
Not use a Gregorian calendar. They do not.
Right. Yeah.
Yalda doesn't even think in terms of October, November,
right.
December.
You know, in the Islamic world, they know what the seventh day of the week is. They know what the same the seventh day of the week in Europe, same as the seventh day of the week on the Inca and Aztec calendar. It was the same around the world, and it hasn't changed.
Yeah, I just wanted to point that out. So if anybody thought that just the Romans tricked the world, well, they didn't get to the Persians.
No. And, you know, and by the way, one of the things that's interesting here is that while the Gregorian calendar and the Persian calendar and the rabbinic calendar are wrong, the years are wrong, the start of the year is wrong, the names for the months of the year are wrong, the names for the days of the week are wrong. They're all polluted. They're all pagan. They're all disgusting. But them being wrong does not make a alternative to them necessarily right.
By the way, their new year over there, it's called Nowruz. It's the biggest celebration of the year. Is first day of Abib. They don't call it Abib, but it's the first day of Abib. And interestingly enough, the celebration goes on for. Guess how many days?
7? Oh, 13 days. Okay. Oh, yeah. So then it would start with Pesach.
There's no celebration.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Wow.
I mean, that's just the truth. But they start, they base it on the new moon exactly when we do. They're in the midst of it now.
Yeah, and I've always felt a little uncomfortable using the new moon closest to the vernal equinox because I've only used it because of the fact that that barley typically ripens around the world at that time, and so it's just
grow some.
And so it's an interesting way to go about doing that. But one of the things that's interesting there is when you bring it back to Bereshith. Bereshith introduces us to the sun and moon as signs for the Moed, which are the meeting times of the Mikra. So it's the sun and the moon that we're to use. Therefore, if you're going to use the sun, well, the timing that's associated with the Abib, it happens to be the vernal equinox. Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Anyway, we'll be celebrating Pesach. We hope that you will as well. I want to thank you all for participating. It's been a fun show.